It's showtime again, good people.
I like waking up in the morning, breathing in the air, and realizing I've made it through the night and I haven't wet the bed.
Guess what day it is?
Hump day!
Wednesday.
Hump day!
Wednesday.
Guess what day it is?
It's Wednesday. Who doesn't get excited about Wednesday?
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
And away we go with the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com.
A researcher found that blonde women are slightly smarter than brunettes. Yeah. The researcher said it's not true, but that line tends to work on blonde women at a bar.
As a matter of fact, I have that gentleman on the line, Jay Zikorski. Good evening, and thank you for joining me, Jay.
Lovely to be on your show, Drex.
Thank you very much. Now, you are the author of this study from Ohio State University that found that blondes are, you know, well, they're not, it's not the old cliche, blondes are dumber. No.
No, blondes are not dumb. The IQ tests actually suggest that the average white woman with blonde hair is no less intelligent than a woman with other hair colors. And there's a chance that they are actually smarter.
Now, what are the implications of all of this? Because, when you're making national audiences, when you're on the Conan show, that's pretty good.
It is. I guess a lot of people are saying, Jay, why did you do this kind of research?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge amount of discrimination I've been noticing in the world. And discrimination and prejudice is a reality. The question is, are the prejudices we have actually backed up by facts? And it really takes, it's important to investigate these things. Because if believing in something silly like blondes are dumb isn't true, imagine how many other prejudices that we believe in also are not incorrect, and not also correct.
Well, that's for sure. Yes, we know that's a real thing. And how did you happen to, you just said why you wanted to do it, but how did you do this study?
I work at Ohio State University on something called the National Longitudinal Survey. And the NLS, the National Longitudinal Survey, turned 50 years old next month. On April 11th, we interviewed our very first person. And we've been interviewing people for long periods of time for 50 years. In general, we grab a group of teenagers, we randomly select a group of teenagers, and we follow them for their entire lives for the Department of Labor. And the Department of Labor is interested in these people because they're trying to figure out why some people succeed in life and other people have problems like long-term unemployment. Because we interview these people face-to-face, it's really useful for the interviewers to know what these people look like. Is somebody a blonde hair? Is somebody tall? Is somebody short? Because we don't want to interview the wrong person when we go back year after year.
I understand. And, a lot of people, even guys, and I think that you did include men in this survey, they don't admit that they're not naturally blonde.
One of the interesting things is I looked at both men and women.
Right.
And what it seems to appear from the data is that we ask people to report their natural hair color. And about one out of every six blondes, I'm not sure, are really blonde. I think they might have skipped a bit.
Well, I think men probably the same case. But with your study, studying the intelligence, you found that it worked out the same for blonde men, right?
Blonde men versus, say, men with brown hair.
Right.
Men with brown hair were a slightly bit higher on the IQ scale than men with blonde hair. For women, it was actually reversed. Blonde-haired white women are actually slightly higher. They had a higher average, and they had a higher, and they had second highest median.
It's very interesting stuff. Well, okay, so just goes to show, blonde women may be a little bit smarter than everyone else thought. So, get rid of the cliche. Out the door it goes.
Exactly.
All right,
thank
you very much, Jay. I appreciate your time.
Have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you very much. Oh, and he's from Ohio. I forgot to ask him. I guess he's getting a blizzard there. I do believe it's snowing hard on the East Coast. And everybody's getting the flu. Is that a thing? I suppose.
Move over, Atkinson South Beach. Now you can lose up to 25 pounds in less than 2 weeks. How? With the new flu diet.
I lost 8 pounds in 2 days thanks to the flu diet.
The flu diet is sweeping the nation, and it really works.
Oh, I lost 15 pounds in 3 days. Oh.
Unlike other weight loss programs, the flu diet allows you to eat whatever you want, as much as you want.
Oh, God.
Oh. And oh my God. You'll really work your abs, glutes, and sphincter. The flu diet, now available. Catch it today.
And apparently this is what's going on. Yes, the flu diet. Everybody's giving me thumbs up. Don't touch. I swear to God, I mean, this is the craziest thing. Now, you would think, here we are almost at Easter. We're 4 days away till, Easter right around the corner, Sunday. But you would think that we're done with the flu. No, it's going insane. So be warned, wash your hands. Especially around this place. One person gets it, and down they go.
Oh, yeah. Think about it. We're talking on the microphones. And
yeah. I mean,
somebody who has the blossoming flu could have been speaking on this microphone
who to come after. Yeah, it would be Brett. Yes. Okay. So one of the things that came out today is if you're taking supplements, by the way, you might want to be warned. So this came out, Prevention Magazine drop this today. So if you're taking a multivitamin every day, that's fine. Just don't overdo it. I mean, especially when you hear me talking about the flu, that it's going around and it's rampant across the country and here in California. So people are taking supplements. But be careful. For instance, calcium supplements. A few recent studies have found that they can calcify your arteries and cause heart disease. And they don't make people think that calcium is going to make your bones stronger. But you need to eat food with calcium. Like milk, salmon, broccoli, you know what mom told you. Vitamin E, they used to think that lowered your risk for heart disease and cancer. I was on that for a long time. And this is true. According to this study, they said it might do the opposite. Multivitamins are fine because they don't have enough vitamin E to make much of a difference. But they could do the opposite and raise your risk for heart disease and cancer. So don't overdo it with the E. Iodine supplements. A lot of food in the United States already has iodine in it, salt, okay. And, that can mess with your thyroid. So be careful, you know that. I think this one's interesting. Iron supplements. Because, back in the day, it's like you couldn't get enough iron, right? But too much iron can actually damage your liver and your pancreas and your heart and cause cell damage, along with all the wine that you're jugging.
Yeah, and then it will rust.
Yes.
Terrible.
Awful rust. It's a bad thing. And vitamin B6, high doses can mess with your nervous system. And you can get by without it with, just eating fruit and vegetables, chicken and fish, and just behave yourselves. But there's not going to be any of that behaving yourself stuff. But so be careful. Don't overdo it, everybody. And don't get the flu and don't pass it on. Oh, and by the way, if you get the flu, please stay home. Please stay home. Stay home, people. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to Rosie O'Donnell's brother, Star Wars, Pornhub, David Letterman, Jim Morrison from The Doors. I don't know if we'll get to all of this, but Toronto's former crack-smoking mayor, my favorite in the whole wide world, still my favorite politician, Mayor Rob Ford, lost his battle with cancer, unfortunately. He passed at 46. May he rest in peace. But I know he wouldn't have, in memoriam to him, he wouldn't mind us playing his best of.
I suppose not.
No, I suppose not. So we will. That's on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10.
Talk radio to feed your brain. The Drex Radio Show. Weeknights at 7 on KGO 810.
Finally, a truck made to handle even the toughest customers.
I am training every day. I'm in a gym for 2 hours every day.
Hey, I'm Mike Rowe, here for the all-new Rob Ford F-150. Just like Toronto's mayor, the Rob Ford F-150 is fully loaded.
I drank too much.
High-intensity butane lighters.
I do not use crack cocaine.
But if you do, they're standard. Reinforced steel frame.
I have to be careful.
Spill-resistant vinyl seats. Center console minibar.
My heart bleeds for him when I hear someone gets killed.
That's why we've included safety features like one hot airbag and a built-in breathalyzer.
I haven't touched a drop of alcohol in 3 weeks.
To keep you from drunk driving.
I'll take a urine test right now.
That's an available upgrade. The all-new Rob Ford F-150. Built Rob Ford tough.
All right, may he rest in peace. He died yesterday. He passed away at the age of 46. He had a battle with cancer. But I have to tell you, here's what I loved about Toronto's mayor, Mayor Ford. He told the truth. I mean, with all the silliness and crazy, nutty wackiness that's going on in this country, who's telling the truth? You never know if you're ever hearing the truth. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? I mean, Toronto Mayor Rob Ford admitted to everything. And this is in memoriam of him. So that's what we're doing. So here he is. And by the way, this was all going on in 2013 when the video surfaced of him smoking crack. At first, he denied it, and then he had to admit it and step down.
Yes, I have smoked crack cocaine. No, do I? Am I an addict? No.
When have you?
Have I tried it? Probably in one of my drunken stupors, probably approximately about a year ago. I want to be crystal clear to every single person. These mistakes will never, ever, ever happen again. I was elected to do a job, and that's exactly what I'm going to continue doing.
And then, if you remember, after the Toronto City Council voted to strip Mayor Ford of most of his powers a few years ago, he accidentally knocked over a female council member and gave her a fat lip. I mean, he saw his brother get into an argument on the other side of the room. He tried to rush to his defense, and then he knocked her over. Do we all remember that? I mean, it was just insane.
That guy was a mess.
Here we go.
So we've got some angry exchanges going on.
Watch this. The mayor
while
is
the
running,
meeting was
running.
Still going on, the mayor
he's attacked somebody.
Here.
The mayor that is Councillor Pam McConnelly, another councillor. He ran at her and grabbed her.
You know, Carol, you had another vantage point. I was actually seeing the mayor's brother, Councillor Doug Ford, who was angrily
Just hang on a second. Let's just listen in, because we really need to interpret what we just saw there.
Okay, well, I'm seeing the councillor, Pam McConnell, who you mentioned. Go ahead.
Hang on. Let's just watch for a second. I don't know whether he... Can we just remove the banner so we can see the councillor in the green? Wait a second. Okay. I'm not sure exactly how aggressive that was, what the relationship is between these two people. I wish I could provide more context.
See, we're not the only ones. Doesn't it make you feel better? I mean, back in the day. And then Rob Ford also publicly responded to a woman who'd accused him of making a rather disgusting proposition involving his mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, and the last thing was Olivia Gondek. It says that I wanted to eat her. I've never said that in my life to her. I would never do that. I'm happily married. I've got more than enough to eat at home.
All right, now let's get back to these United States, because we've got our own hot mess on our hands, and you know what I'm talking about.
I love this country.
I love the country.
I love the old days.
I love free trade.
I love my company.
I love building buildings.
I love what I'm doing.
I love hopping around.
I love the way they twist and turn.
I love NASCAR.
I love your potatoes.
We love people that faint.
I love that sign.
I love to bring my people up.
I love helping people.
I love Howie Kurtz.
I love Sheriff Joe.
I love my father.
I love my kids.
I love these people.
I love tough people.
I love my protesters.
I love this guy over here.
I love women.
They love me and I love them.
I love my life.
I love the military.
I love great generals.
I love the vets.
I love the wounded warriors.
I love China. China's great. I love Mexico.
I love the Mexican people.
I love the Hispanics.
I love the Saudis.
I love Israel.
I love the evangelicals.
I love the Mormons.
I love South Carolina.
I love Iowa.
I love Nashville.
I love you, Ohio.
I love Idaho.
I love Nevada.
I love New Hampshire.
I love Florida.
I love Georgia.
I do love Virginia.
I love you, people.
I love you.
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 I love you all.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love the poorly educated.
I love you, Rob Ford. May you rest in peace. Please, Donald, pick up a crack pipe.
You know, that would explain a lot about some of his policies
no,
and what he says.
He doesn't drink or smoke anything. Never has. Yeah, no, he's a teetotaler. He's as straight as it gets, dude. But you got to love the battle that's going on today, because I hear Cruz's Super PAC posted this picture of Melania Trump from her GQ days, rather naughty, saying something like, "Ooh, would you like this to be your next first lady?" Now, Cruz immediately denied it. But Trump then, let me see what Donald said. His tweet, Lion Ted Cruz just used a picture of Melania from a GQ shoot in his ad. Be careful, Lion Ted, or I will spill the beans on your wife. He just said a little while ago.
Wonder what those beans are.
And let me see Cruz's responses to that tweet. Pick of your wife, not from us. Donald, if you try to attack Heidi, you're more of a coward than I thought. Hashtag classless, Cruz tweeted. Oh, my God. Well, let's find out what's going on with Heidi.
It's turning into a reality show for sure.
Oh, tell. Well, I can't tell. Don't know. But Melania, yeah. I mean, she was a model. She was a hot, sexy model. And by the way, so, I mean, his excuse was that it's not his campaign that sent it out. It probably wasn't. It was one of his super PACs.
If you're Donald, why do you care? Just embrace it.
Yeah, who cares? I mean, your numbers will just go through the roof again. Everybody loves it. Who cares? All right. What did Kasich say? These sort of personal things are way out of bounds. Well, thank you. All right. Back to bed. Thank you very much. We're going to take a break and we come back. This is going to be fun. If you like Obama, if you don't like Obama, then you can yell at the radio. You can sit there and scream. All right. In the commute. I have Erin Aubrey Kaplan. She's going to be my guest, and she is the author of I Heart Obama, and we'll do some reflecting. Yes, let's have a reflection. And then at the top of the hour, yes, expert Emily Morse. Yes, her, Sex with Emily, will be our guest. And things are going to really get hot and steamy in here, all right? That's on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Hear the news on KGO 810, then talk about it on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
The latest on President Obama's trip to Cuba. I saw that over the weekend he and his family were photographed on a walking tour of Havana in the pouring rain. Which means the president is like everyone's dad on vacation. If he paid for the non-refundable tour, you're going to go on that non-refundable tour. Like, get your ponchos. We're going to take that tour. Obama also spoke in Cuba yesterday and said that U.S. Airlines will start making commercial flights to Cuba this year. But first, Obama said he wants to see a greater respect for human rights. Not in Cuba, at LaGuardia. Animals running around.
Which would be an accurate assessment. And I say good evening to my guest, Erin Aubrey Kaplan. Good evening, Erin. Thank you for joining me.
Good evening, Drex. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So, you know, the president took some heat for staying down there in Cuba during the Brussels terrorist attack.
Right.
And I don't think that was justifiable. I don't know how you feel about it. What were your thoughts?
I think he did not the right thing, but he did, you know, the acceptable thing, continuing, you know, his trip. Of course, he gets criticized at pretty much every turn, so it's not surprising. But, you know, he did address the situation, and, you know, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I was fine with it, too. I mean, you know, as he said yesterday, he did address it. And by the way, he has a moving White House. It's called Air Force One. So, you know.
Right. Well, he also addressed it really thoughtfully. He didn't just say the usual perfunctory stuff. He really, you know, made some thoughtful remarks that I wish I could hear from other people running for president. But anyway,
well, Erin, I must say, you know, and this is already sunk into my mind that the legacy of President Obama will be seen shortly after he leaves office. And and I already look longingly back and think about 2008, how excited I was to be in Chicago. I met him as the junior senator when he was in Illinois and I was working in Chicago. And wow. I always thought the world of him. Yeah, so I followed this. I was there in Millennial Park the night that he won. So it was electric. And, you know, I've never felt that way about a politician before. And I know that some people are disappointed in his second term, but really compared to what's going on now, I think that we're going to miss him. I know I'll speak for myself.
Yeah.
I will.
Yeah. Well, you're not the first person who I've heard this from. And you especially have reason to miss him. You actually kind of knew him. And you know, as you were talking, I was thinking, wow, we sure are very far away, from 2008 from, you know, Obama's campaign of One America, remember that?
Yes.
Us coming together, et cetera. I really feel like he believed he could be the guy, the man, who could finally bring us all together. It sounds cliched, but, you know, like you, I was very moved by him. I was very, it was electric. It was, you know, and seeing him in person especially at that time was really special. And it awakened in me a real energy and sort of political energy, but a personal kind of energy too that I had not felt in politics for my lifetime. So it just seems like now, 8 years later, we are on the completely opposite side of that particular arc. And You know, unfortunately, ironically, it's partly because Obama has been president that we are at such a poisonous point. I mean, it's not what he intended and not what should have happened. But, you know, unfortunately, what he did simply being president, being black president, it was sort of show us the worst angels of our nature, I guess you could say.
Well, as an African-American yourself, I mean, do you think that he has brought the nation together at all when it comes to racial progress?
Well, I think people voted for him twice. You know, he did have that effect. I think he did inspire a lot of people. He, you know, inspired the same idealism that inspired it across racial lines. Unfortunately, I think there was a lot of resentment on the other side of that admiration and idealism. Was a lot of resentment, a lot of, I think, racially rooted resentment that was very powerful. It certainly kind of shaped Congress. It remade the Republican Party. And that animosity never let up. It never waned. There was never any sense of, well, okay, let's back off of this. He's president. Let's work with him. That intense opposition really, you know, poisoned the waters for even the supporters of Obama who, you know, I just felt like they just couldn't match that energy, that opposition. It just, I think it surprised everyone, including and starting with Obama himself.
Well, if we go back to 2008, one of the things that I remember distinctly was, yes, I'm here, was, I think.
What happened?
You want to check the phone there? I think we got cut off. Yes, if you will all remember Will I Am and Yes, I Can. Do you remember that? I mean, because when I hear this song, it takes me right back to 2008.
It was a creed written into the founding documents.
So this is the Obama the way I'm going to remember him.
Of a nation. Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
It was whispered by slaves and abolitionists as they blazed the trail toward freedom. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
It was sung
by immigrants.
I listened to this the other day, and I thought, this is so powerful. And it just took me right back to 2008.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
It was the call of workers organized. Women who reached for the ballots. A president who chose the moon as our new
boy, this is pre-gray hair. I can tell you that. I'm looking at the video as it
plays. Yes, we can to justice and equality.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
This is really stirring, isn't it? I mean, you know, even if you don't think now, think back to 2008, how moving this was.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. To opportunity and prosperity. Yes, we can. To opportunity and prosperity.
Yes, we can heal this nation.
All right, I'm going to take a break, and we'll be back with Aaron Aubrey Kaplan, the author of I Heart Obama. And we'll continue our conversation on KGO 810.
Tune in and hang on. The Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
We can.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. And we're talking about, the book, I Heart Obama, which is available everywhere. And yes, we can. And I went back to 2008, and we've got Aaron back. Aaron Aubrey Kaplan is the author. Thank you very much, Aaron, for joining me again. And while we lost you there, I was playing Yes, We Can, which was so inspirational in 2008. I mean, you know, that song will always remind me of the president's legacy.
Yeah, sure. It will. And, you know, the Yes, We Can, it turned out to mean that, yes, we can elect this man, and we did, it twice. But, you know, after he kind of crossed over from the magic of that campaign to the presidency and the political reality, it just became very different and very, you know, it just, I guess, I don't know what the word is, just really intense opposition, pretty much the opposite of what Obama had hoped for, what I think a lot of us were hoping for. But that opposition had been around, you know, it had been out there, but I don't think anyone, including myself, I don't know about you, expected to be so intense as to create a political movement that sort of reform the Republican Party and really became almost normalized. You know, it's just kind of incredible when you look back and see what happened in the country in the last 7-8 years.
Right, and look at what a mess the GOP is now. All right, and by the way, Obama now is not and never promised to be a black leader.
No, of course not. But, you know, one of the things I address in the book is that for African Americans, I mean, we have a whole history of first, you know, people breaking the color barrier
right.
in various things. And he's this amazing, tremendous symbol that no one was expecting to happen. And so, of course, we knew the political reality is that, yes, he's the president of all Americans. He has many constituencies to deal with. But it was very, very difficult. It still remains difficult to have this black man in office and not expect him to at least articulate a lot of issues important to black people. At least, you know, it's very emotionally very difficult to not expect that of him. And so that's been one thread of the conversation about Obama amongst black people for 8 years now.
Okay, let's.
And there's a lot to it.
Okay, let's take a call or two here. Here's Chico in Humboldt. You're on KGO.
Hello. What I see in the Obama presidency is that it's showing us just how powerful the president is, and it also brought the racists out like cockroaches.
Well, yeah, it's really true. And I mean, you know, yeah. And if we just look at the campaign that's going on with Trump, I don't think that Donald Trump set out for his campaign to be this way. But somehow along the way, the white supremacist group kind of hitched their wagon to his.
Yeah, although, Dirk, I would say, let's not forget that Donald Trump was spearheaded the birther movement, remember?
Oh, for sure, yes.
Back in 2008. So it doesn't surprise me that that his campaign has this tone, but I also think he's being fueled by the reaction he's getting from, you know, these kind of white supremacists and nationalists and people like that. He's playing the card.
But I think at his core, I don't think he's a racist. I
hope you're right. But if he's playing the racist, that's kind of bad too.
Right. Yeah. When he didn't want to answer the David Duke question and played that was a political game. I totally agree with you. So, you know, some people think that Obama's presidency might make it harder, not easier, for another black person to be elected president. Do you agree with that?
You know, I don't really know. It's hard to tell. I don't know if the country wants to go through this turmoil again. I don't know if Obama, now that he's broken the barrier, will now be easier for another person to come after him. I mean, it was very hard for Jackie Robinson, right? Jackie Robinson got all kinds of hell from, you know, and he took it. And then, of course, the major leagues integrated. But this is not baseball. And I don't know. I have no idea whether we can go through this again. I will say that we have a woman running for president and a Jewish man, and that is actually those are not really issues out there in the campaign. So maybe he's made it easier for people who are not white and male to run.
Right. Well, and there was Ben Carson, but he fell asleep somewhere along the campaign, and that was the end of that.
He's a whole other conversation. Yes.
Right. I know. You know what? But I want to talk about something that I think is very important for those people listening who don't care for President Obama or think that he didn't do a great job. You have your own criticisms, and I do too. Do you want to discuss some of those?
Sure. I want to just say that, you know, the title "I Heart Obama," it's not a complete Valentine to Obama. What I mean by that is, you know, I feel very connected to him. I feel a deep identification with him, and I did sort of, you know, fall in love with him. But it's like that was the romance, and then we got married, and, you know, then there's the reality of the marriage.
Exactly.
And so there's a lot of what he's actually done policy-wise that I don't like. I mean, I could give you a list, probably maybe the same list you have. You know, the drone strikes, the national security state. There are things
agreement. Yes, we agree on that one.
Yes.
And I do think that he did not when he drew the line in Syria and did not help out. I think that was a problem. Yes.
It was a problem, but I just wanted this book to be about something, just about his symbolism as president. What did it mean that he was even here, that he was president for 2 terms, and that he integrated this very rarefied space in American life, you know, the presidency. What did that mean, and specifically, what did it mean to African Americans? So, there was a whole discussion about what he did as president. And for a lot of black people, I will say, they looked at everything he did, whether they liked it or not, they looked at what he did through the lens of this incredible what they saw as racial opposition to him. And they said, you know, what might he have done without that opposition? What might he have done with a little more cooperation? You know, not to justify things that he did, but, you know, for a lot of people, the first way they looked at him was as this embattled president who found it tough to get anything, anything progressive, forget it, anything, you know, mildly liberal, that was hard too. So, I think he is not just the sum of what he did, what his actions were, but he also is this man that I think we really kind of missed. You know, he's a very intelligent, sophisticated, interesting guy that I think we were so like at war with each other that we kind of missed that narrative about him.
Oh yeah, and there was that war with the previous 8 years and all of those things and the recession, and it was horrible.
Oh yeah,
and I you know, you talk about, you think that black people will look back and heart him and love him more after he leaves office. But I have to tell you, I think, you know, just the way, because I think all administrations are up against this. You know, they come in and even if Trump gets in there or Hillary, they're going to have difficult time. It's just going to be, you know, hell's a blazing. And I think that people forget that. But I do think that when we reflect in a generation or so, or maybe even a decade, we will look back and look at him the way the GOP and even the Democrats, the way we looked at Ronald Reagan. Do you think so?
You know, it's hard to say at this point. I'm starting to hear all the kind of, you know, comments about what will his legacy be, and I'm starting to hear things like he will be one of the greatest presidents. He'll be remembered as one of the greatest presidents ever. I'm hearing that, but he will not be transformational the way Reagan was considered transformational. That's now, and I think Obama will not be that because he was just too disliked by too many people. Unfairly, yes, but he was disliked intensely. Reagan was liked, quote unquote. He was popular. Obama was just not. He did not have that level of popularity and connection as president because there was just too much animosity, too much resistance to him. And so I don't think, you know, he will be that, but maybe history will look at him differently down the line. It's hard to say.
Somebody's calling in, and I don't have time to go to more calls here because we've got to wrap it up. But Anne, thank you, from Potter Valley, said Obama should have done more earlier. But he really had to wait until he won the second election, you know, to get in there and get things through because he didn't have to worry about being reelected at that point.
Right. Well, remember, you know, one thing I compare him to Jackie Robinson. But remember, Jackie Robinson, when he stepped up to integrate baseball, he already knew how to play baseball. That was covered. All he had to do was just kind of do his thing in the context of the major leagues. Obama came to office and then he had to figure out how to be president. He had to create the job. And so it takes you a while to figure that out. And remember, the first year in office, he spent a lot of his political capital on health care reform right away. And a lot of people say, oh, he should have done that. But when could he have done it?
And there's a lot of people, and it needs to be fixed. I will say that. I think that most people agree.
Yeah.
But at least there's something. Before, there was nothing. And if some people have
nothing.
Their way. Right. And we don't want to go back to nothing. So God
bless
him
for
that.
We don't want to go back to nothing. Now we have something to work with. And many presidents tried and failed to do health care reform.
Okay, so, Aaron Aubrey Kaplan, I Heart You, I Heart Obama is the name of the book, and I think you're fantastic. I would love to talk to you again sometime. Let's do it.
I'm available anytime. Thanks. I really enjoyed talking to you. We have to continue this conversation.
We will. I'm going to put you in the Rolodex. Okay.
Okay, right. Very good.
Thank
you,
Aaron.
Got a Rolodex. Great.
Well,
okay, Drex, thank you.
Into my Mac, you know what I'm saying. All right, let's take a break, and we come back, and we're going to go to Dr. Emily Morse. Yes, you know her. Sex with Emily Morse. Well, not sex with her.